I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you.
From Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of Muslim Lady here from IRIB English Radio. Inshallah ta'ala, we are going to be having a series of discussions regarding the topic of women of Ashura or Ashura and women. In the studio, as always, I have the pleasure and honor of having my lovely sister and friend and wonderful guest, Sister Razia Shamli. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, my dear sister.
So, Sister Razia, we were talking about women who played great roles throughout history, especially during the events of Karbala and Ashura and whatever happened afterwards.
Yeah, but we had an incomplete topic last session.
Exactly, and we were talking about more contemporary figures, closer to our time, perhaps more relatable. And yeah, we were talking about the wonderful Bintul Huda al-Sadr, the sister of Ayatollah Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr. And tell me more about her, aside from the fact that she was an author and whatnot.
I think the secret to her success was her punctuality. I just found this out because I was reading about her that she was the head of several schools, chain schools in Iraq, under the title of Az-Zahra School. Like they have different branches in Basra, in Kufa, Qadamain, Najaf, and Karbala, and she was the head of two of these schools.
For girls,
right. Mm-hmm. And what she specifically tried to do was to incorporate two religious courses in the curriculum of the schools. And for these lessons, for these courses, she also endeavored, she was very sensitive to put very educated Muslim teachers to teach these lessons to the girls.
Right.
And she believed that in the academic agenda of the school, in schools, especially for girls, they will have to learn Islamic education as well.
Mm.
Everything that Shiite Islam has to offer in its teachings. So she made sure that these was happening for all these girls, implemented, right. And I was reading somewhere that after school finished, she put extra time to educate these teachers, the teachers, to know how to teach, the methods of teaching and the content of teaching. This shows her selfless efforts in trying to achieve the goal that she had in mind. That, it's very good to be up to date, to be educated, to be a knowledgeable woman. But because at that time, a lot of feministic thoughts were going on that they were trying to despirit the education system from the Islamic teachings.
Mm.
And she made sure that this would not happen. And once the schools were nationalized and the Az-Zahra schools all went into under the headship of the government, she stopped teaching and she stopped taking any role, although she was invited to take a part. And she said that my mere purpose was to serve God. And after this, their purposes does not suit mine.
Mm.
And so she refrained and she resigned.
Interesting.
Something that I found was that after Shahid Baqir Sadr, before his martyrdom, he was arrested by the Iraqi government in Najaf. She went to the haram, to the shrine of Imam Ali alayhi salam, and she gave a sermon.
Yeah.
And she made people aware of what was happening. And people in Najaf started to demonstrate. And following that, people in other cities of Iraq started to demonstrate. And the government was forced to free Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr, right? And then after following all these demonstrations, people in other countries like Lebanon, Iran, and elsewhere, they also started their demonstrations. They arrested Sayyida Amina and also her beloved brother, and they persecuted them.
Yes.
Right?
Directly by Saddam himself.
Yeah. Earlier, when you said that she was a writer and a poet, I think this was her method of reaching a greater audience.
Mm.
Because her thoughts, her beliefs, her iman, she wanted a means.
That comes to show the importance of platform.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Like the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salam, 1400 years ago, their platforms were very much limited,
mm-hmm.
right? It was either the mosque or certain, I know, Quran tafsir classes they could hold in their houses for women, right? But in any case, they exhausted all options, all platforms where they could reach out to their audiences and spread the word of Islam and Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And I feel that that shows that when it comes, when we move toward further down history, toward the age of technology and development and stuff like that, and the platforms naturally change, as Muslims, whether women or men, we really shouldn't shy away from those opportunities. We shouldn't shy away from using it in our own advantage and sort of like using the enemy's tool against them.
Mm-hmm.
We can't say like, oh, but Instagram, Facebook are full of facade and sedition and corruption. Well, don't search that stuff. Do what you have to do.
Exactly.
And whoever's looking for your content will find you.
Exactly. Exactly. If you're good and if you present it in a good way, if you're an expert in your field, mm-hmm. you will definitely reach out to a great audience.
Exactly.
And this is for sure.
Mm. We're going to go on a short break and we're going to be right back. So don't go anywhere.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Here in the studio with my darling sister Razia Shamili, and we're discussing Ashura'i women and Ashura'in women.
There is one case in my mind whose name is Barak Hussein. I follow her on Instagram. Do you know her, right?
She's yeah,
an
Muslim
Arabi
therapist.
Woman.
Yeah.
She's a therapist,
Canada, yeah.
a psychologist in Toronto, Canada. And she really goes out of her way in the demonstrations that they have in Toronto or like the sessions, the majalis that they have, religious majalis. Everywhere she tries to deliver a lecture, an Islamic lecture, you know, like she has a she's a psychologist, but she views it, she looks at it from an Islamic approach, from an Islamic aspect. And I think she's targeting a large audience, and she's especially targeting one gap in the Muslim community, their psychology, their peace of mind.
Exactly.
That a lot of people,
health.
The mental health of people, that a lot of people shy away from it to go to, you know, to refer to the experts for their problems, or they don't know how to put them, how to, where to go, what to do, how, you know, if there's a solution for it, or they go on living with their sick minds or their sick situations of life for years, and she's doing her best.
Mm.
Until now, God knows
if
tomorrow or the day after tomorrow she would change. But up until now, when I see her and her programs, I see that she's really trying her best. She's putting all her effort to be a Ashura'in woman.
Mm.
I see her as one of the instances.
Yeah, exactly.
She's an ordinary woman. I think she's a single mom. I don't know much about her. Yeah, but she's doing her best in the way she's raising her child, her daughter. She has a hijabi daughter. In Canada, and the way she posts about how the two of them do their religious practices on the nights of Qadr, on all different Islamic occasions, on stopping oppression, on, you know, showing their hatred from the oppression of their times. She's doing a great job.
Exactly.
So, as you said, Ashura is in our time.
Mm.
It's not so much easier to live in this time.
Okay.
They say at the end of time, having faith is like keeping a burning charcoal in your hands. How difficult that would be, right? So I think our time is a very, very difficult and demanding time. And if we live to be, we haven't seen the Prophet, we haven't seen the Imam of our time, but we believe in them, we have faith in them. And the Prophet, he's so proud of us because at his own time, people saw him in person and they listened to him and they believed in him. Mm. But the Prophet himself said at one point in history, people will come where they have never seen me, they have never heard from me, but they have faith in me. And these are my followers, and I am so...
I think he calls us his brothers.
Exactly.
These are my brothers.
So we were talking about the Sayyida Aminah, where she used the platform of story writing.
Yep.
And she specifically tried to entail her stories, where she was talking about cosmetics, hijab, women, concerns of women. I have never gotten my hands on any of her pieces of art, but I would love to one day.
Mm. They're mostly short stories, and they're mostly addressed toward young women, teenagers even. And they're interesting. Her writing method is very mellow. Mm-hmm. You know, I liked it. It was calming. You didn't feel like some certain doctrines and dogmas into your brain and turn you into... You know, I felt like it's something that a normal person could read, relate to, and try to, and be inspired to learn more about something, anything.
I think I really don't know how the educational system in Iraq is running right now, and what is their syllabus and curriculum, and how Islamic they're trying to, you know, how Islamic they try their new generation to become educated. But from what I see from my experience being in Iraq and talking to, I have some Iraqi friends, you know, the Iraqis have a lot of harara for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. They have this passion for Imam Hussein. You know, they love him, and they're articulate people, and they truly believe in him with all the dimensions of their being, of all the cells of their body. And you could see that in their hospitality during the time of Arba'in, right? But scholarly way, when you are thinking about feminism and how, you know, you could raise a girl who is not so fond of fashion and this modern lifestyle where it deviates you away from, you know, your main purpose in life, I see that there is a gap. Recently, there have been a lot of progress in the city, in Iraq.
I mean, with Iraq, there was Saddam, and then there was America, and I think it's like case closed. Anyway, more on...
With us, it was the Pahlavi regime, and then there's 8 years of imposed war, and then the Cold War.
So more on the topic of how we can turn women in Ashura, make it relatable, and turn it into Ashura in women, right? You gave us the very interesting, very fitting example of Bintul Huda Sadr. And she was a wonderful woman. Her circumstances, maybe not the same as many of the young women who are living today, but in any case, it's more tangible.
Yeah, and the other thing that I found about her life was that she held religious sessions in her own house.
That's all the time we have for today's episode. Thank you for being with us. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Who is the Lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. To Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity.
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah.
Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer.
the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female and made us into nations and tribes so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah, Muhammad is the messenger, so Allah is our return.
The Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.